So what are some of the latest proposals that seem to be rising to the surface, the cream to the top, as it were?
Well, two things I think of a special interest to the audience we have. One, in the proposal that the Democratic members of the Joint Select Committee made late last week was an additional $200 billion in cuts from discretionary defense spending and another $200 billion in non-defense discretionary spending. So on top of the approximately $917 billion that's already in the baseline for cuts, you would have another $400 for a total of $1.3 trillion over the next 10 years. That is substantially more than either our commission, Domenici-Rivlin, or the Bowles-Simpson Commission recommended, and begins to cut what we think is into the muscle of some of these agencies. In addition, there's a big fight about what really has been offered or not offered in revenue. The latest Democratic offer is that we'll get $350 billion now, and then we'll have instructions to the committees to find another $650 billion sometime over the next year, and that's a total of a trillion. So about $2.3 trillion is the latest Democratic proposal. Republicans have responded, of course, with substantially more spending cuts. But the big difference between the Republican and Democratic plans is Medicare.
Well, let's get into that a little bit, because they have to be able to come to some sort of agreement, or the cuts are going to be across the board and they're going to be automatic. So isn't that impetus for them to find some common ground?
It is impetus, but the question is whether it's going to be something that has long-lasting change on the nation's debt trajectory, which is going kind of up, up, and away right now, or whether it's just going to be cuts and nicks around the edges. So far, the big fight has been on Medicare. Republicans have asked for a full-scale reform of the program. They're pushing something called the Domenici-Rivlin Plan, which we developed over here over the last year. It has been rejected so far. It would save about $4.5 trillion over the next 20 years as it went into effect kind of a phased fashion. Democrats have responded with $350 billion over the next 10 years, most of which would come from providers. And would also have some reduction for the Prevention and Public Health Trust Fund and a tax on providers. That doesn't get in the minds of many Republicans at the basic structural problems. So right now what you have is a very interesting and clear dynamic. Republicans say we'll give more on revenues if you all will go into fundamental changes in Medicare and Medicaid. Democrats say, well, you haven't given enough yet on revenue, so we're not going to give you anything on Medicare. My suspicion is, with only 9 days to go, that we will get something cobbled together that saves $1.2 trillion against the baseline, as Congressional Budget Office will score it, and we will not get, in the short term, any real changes in the Medicare, Medicaid, and other health care programs that are driving the debt.
Well, is that then just a function of the contentious nature that is on Capitol Hill now, and is that historically even more contentious, more vitriolic than it has been in years past?
Well, it has. I was head of the Senate Budget Committee starting in 81, a long time ago, and we were able to make a lot of deals across the aisle, and even with the House and Senate, even though sometimes they don't get along as much as one would wish. But that's changed now. And so far, the caucuses in both parties have prevented these negotiators from being as free as they might otherwise be. And what you have is everyone looking forward to the elections in 2012 and not wanting to give up, on the one hand, a club called Medicare. In other words, kind of pushing granny off the cliff is what they want to do when they change Medicare. And the other side not wanting to give up tax. All Democrats want to do is tax and spend. Those two kinds of weapons that people think they can use next year in the elections is what is holding up the entire process.
We are talking with Steve Bell, the Senior Director at the Economic Policy Project, the Bipartisan Policy Center. And the getting past politics to get this done, there's also the continuing resolution. It's going to be expiring before the super committee is able to come up with its decision, assuming that they can. So there's going to be this weird limbo period of 5 or 6 days between the expiration of the CR and the super committee coming back with its decision. How does that work? I mean, I realize that we're talking about two different budget time periods, but it's still going to be a bit askew.
Oh, it is going to be askew, because whatever you decide to do with the continuing resolution at the close of business this Friday, whether it's another continuing resolution for a short term, which is what I think it will be, that'll have some impact on the baseline that the Joint Select Committee has to cut from. So you have to get one in place, namely what is the real baseline, and that'll be determined by the nature of the continuing resolution. And then after you do that, and you decide if you want to cut some more money from discretionary appropriated accounts, then you will have to figure out what the new spending baseline going forward would be. This would be a terrible time for an accountant or someone who was trying to make sense of all this, because everything is happening really within a 5 or 6 day period.
So then I want to ask you, historical perspective, if you've ever seen it like this before. Continuing resolutions, I know, are nothing new, but not often do you have the X factor of a super committee having to come back with massive budget cuts.
No, that's a very good point. This is the first time that Congress has really gone outside of its own structure. You have a House and a Senate, and you have the two parties. They've now put together this extra congressional structure called the Joint Select Committee. We've never had to deal with something like this before, especially with the very broad powers that it has. And so everything is sort of in limbo, to use your word, which I think is a very good word, until the Joint Select Committee decides or doesn't decide on whether they're going to go for a very big deal, which over the next 20 years would have real impact on our debt trajectory, or whether they kind of put together nits and gnats and try to just barely get to $1.2 trillion and say, well, we'll leave fundamental reform for somebody else 2 or 3 years from now. We don't know that. There's a lot. We've had a lot of meetings over the last week on the Hill, and we've talked to almost all the members of the Joint Select Committee and their staff, and there is a real desire to get a big deal. But there is the problem of trying to get a majority of both caucuses in the House and the Senate to go along with a big deal. So it's a situation where you've got 12 folks that want to get something done, and you've got 523 folks who aren't so sure.
Meanwhile, you have the federal government, and I don't mean the political, I mean the folks who are in the nuts and bolts of it, the feds, who are sort of waiting to just find out what happens next. I happen to know a group of feds who are wondering if they'll even have jobs, if they're going to wind up getting cut because of these cuts. Everybody waiting on pins and needles. What advice would you offer them, what they should be looking for over the next few weeks, and if they need to start crafting a plan B?
Well, I think they should. I think it's going to be this kind of anxiety, this kind of uncertainty is going to continue for some time. This is not going to be the final word. We still have 2012 to go, calendar year, where all sorts of things might emerge. So I would say this. I don't think anything other than looking at the continuing resolution for your agency, what do you have, and then taking about 10% below that and seeing what that leads to. That is probably a good rule of thumb. Trying to look into a very murky future.
And how do you get the business of government done while you have this hanging over you?
That is the best question. We want a lot of folks to do things like better enforcement, better regulation, following bad people and getting them sanctioned. You can't do that if you cut back on the size of the workforce. And so you have people working at cross purposes. One, government needs to be more efficient. Two, we need to take people out of government so it has less to spend. Obviously, there's a principle known as cognitive dissonance. And I think right now most people in the federal government, in the political branch, are saying things which are polar opposite, and yet they seem reasonably comfortable. Most of them don't know how government works, to be very blunt with you, and they don't realize what you're talking about when you say, let's cut SEC, CFTC, let's cut transportation and safety programs and airlines and stuff. And I think there is this feeling that most of what they know is there's waste, fraud, and abuse, and government's too big. But they have no idea what government does or what will happen when you decide to cut back, let's say, 5 or 6% of the FTEs for various agencies. And it'll get worse as far as inefficiency, but it won't be the fault of the agencies.
And I want to very briefly, hypothetically, make you an advisor to the super committee. If you could walk in there and give them any piece of advice about how to find common ground in 30 seconds or less, what would you tell them?
I'd walk in and say, take the big deal. You've got two plans, one from Simpson Bowles, one from Domenici Rivlin. Either one will get you a stabilized debt, and either one will let you change the debt trajectory. If you don't do that, you're going to be a real disappointment to investors and to citizens in this country, and you'll pay a price.